It's actually very difficult to do much with screens other than present a screen. In order for these objects to become truly ambient and truly integrated, leveraging voice, leveraging gestural interaction, leveraging haptics across materials and interactions that you stroke a surface, and it is obviously the future. And as people become part biological and part bionic, which we will, you know, the objects around us will do the same. As we have chips integrated with us, as we become part machine, the machines become more and more human.
You're listening to Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast, and that's Benjamin Hubert, founder of the London-based industrial design agency Layer Design. He's discussing the tech of the future with myself, Bethan Ryder, and Reiko Morrison, our head of CMF. Layer Design recently launched a monograph published by Fiden during the London Design Festival. This coincided with an exhibition which ran as part of the inaugural Material Matters Fair. The book covers the various stages of Benjamin's career and the many products he's designed for the likes of Bang & Olufsen, Vitro, Moroso, Capellini, Muto and more. Hubert had a design career in his sights while still at school and initially wanted to design cars, but he went into product design instead and has designed this huge range of products that ranges from lighting to tech. It's tech in particular where Layer Design excels at creating incredibly tactile products through a combination of materials. Next on the podcast, Benjamin tells us how he sees consumer tech evolving, with less screens and a rich sense of materiality and something he calls haptic happiness.
My approach and Layer's approach is to think about technology as an enabler, not an expression. It enables an easier and happier and healthier life, or at least should. It should aim to bring people together and to accentuate the human quality. It shouldn't necessarily be a technology for technology's sake, certainly shouldn't create a barrier. And we have enough screens and devices and LEDs in our life to rethink the role of technology and certainly the expression. So the Deutsche Telekom work was really around the devices that we all really need to do everything now. So routers, smart devices, the smart home, communication tools. But we don't necessarily always love them. We don't necessarily always want them on show. We don't necessarily think of them as status symbols. But that's because they are commodities, black box. They have a very inhuman way of communicating, both in terms of being not particularly intuitive a lot of the time, as well as, you know, not using the same ways of communicating that we do right now. So one of the ways we think about getting around that is softening it, is making it ambient, is having things that, you know, do communicate a large amount of information, but do it in a very natural fashion. One way into that has been through a rich sense of materiality in looking at natural materials, looking at tactile materials that bring a sense of haptic feedback, haptic happiness, visually and physically tactile, things that, you know, we value and cherish. And for us, it's really about integrating and creating a sense of ambiance and enabling easier, effortless interaction without screaming technology.
Reiko, I'd love to come to you and talk a little bit about that, because it sounds like Benjamin is totally on point with sort of what we're talking about a lot at WGSN, which is things like discrete tech and ambient notifications. Where do you see the future of home tech? And it just sounds like we're really aligning with Benjamin here.
Definitely. And I think the connectivity concept and the Bang & Olufsen products from Layer are just such good examples of the way that home products can integrate into the home environment, and the way that they use these tactile materials like metal and wood and textile. You know, when we really look at the way that home has evolved, it's really become this multifunctional place where, you know, community gathering spaces need to transform into private home offices, and then even private self-care sanctuaries. It's really important for tech products to integrate into all of these spaces and satisfy a variety of style tastes. And this is done by taking cues from the furniture and home decor areas and in the future, I think tech products will be even more material driven. We're going to see more tactile properties of frosted glass and matte textured ceramic and even speckled stone. The focus is going to continue to grow about materials, textures, finishes that impart a feeling of quality and warmth. You know, tech products, they're going to become more objects that we want to cherish for many years to come. They're not seen as these disposable products that, you change out every few years.
And I think, you know, the way Reiko speaks to materials is very eloquent. And it is also part of a larger equation and constellation in that the materiality and physicality of the product is one way of humanizing it, but it has to work in harmony with the UI and UX. So the user interface and the experience around that, because, you know, so many interfaces are screen-based. It's actually very difficult to do much with screens other than present a screen. In order for these objects to become truly ambient and truly integrated, leveraging voice, leveraging gestural interaction, leveraging haptics across materials and interactions that you stroke a surface, and it is obviously the future. And as people become part biological and part bionic, which we will, you know, the objects around us will do the same. As we have chips integrated with us, as we become part machine, the machines become more and more human.
Benjamin, it seems like you have really adopted this material-led design philosophy. And I'm just curious, how do you integrate that into your design process? And do your clients welcome this design philosophy?
I think it's important to give this some context. So my career is broken down into some neat chunks. So you can think about the first 4 or 5 years being very consultancy heavy. Then you can think about the next 4 or 5 years being very furniture and object and interior accessory heavy. And then you can think about Layer as blending those two things together. Inevitably, that means that, you know, I visited a lot of factories and peoples and craftspeople and parts of the world and makers and brands that do things in a very craft-oriented fashion, in a very material-oriented fashion. But at the same time, I've been to the big Asian factories, I've worked with the big tech companies and brought some of that into the conversation. So we know a person that does this, it can be accessible in this way, it can be long-lasting in this manner, it can be sustainability with this lens. And we always bring that to the fore. Now, naturally, there is always a question of scale. So how do you scale some of those applications of materials? It's not always straightforward. You know, when in a piece of furniture, if you're producing, let's say you're producing 5,000 pieces a year, so not a bad run of furniture per year. How do you scale that to 5 million units a year when you're talking about consumer tech? That's not as straightforward. You know, a lot of those very deeply rich material qualities you find in the very highest quality furniture and lifestyle objects are also at a premium. So then how do you apply that logic to a piece of tech which is really accessible? How do you do that with a more accessible audio product, connectivity product, communication device? You know, you don't always have that opportunity, but there is a palette of materials which can be treated in the same fashion. How do you play with metals? How do you play with responsible plastics? How do you treat surface finishes and color? And it's not low level. It's even more difficult to introduce the same kind of qualities, but it's possible, trial and error, producing lots of samples, talking to the right suppliers. You know, I have a very positive outlook on plastic treated the right way because it's incredibly recyclable. It's not always true of some of the composite materials and even the highly crafted materials we might ordinarily associate with high quality. And everything is just about how you handle it. In the right hands, any of those materials can be extremely special, extremely engaging, and extremely responsible.
Yes, and I definitely agree with all of that, especially responsible plastic. And, you know, we're seeing a movement away from all of these secondary processes and just letting plastic be beautiful as it is and thinking about the surface treatments, that can make it even more beautiful. And you just, I've been following your work for a while now, and you seem to be one of the more vocal champions of CMF in the industrial design world. Is it your involvement with the factories and local craftspeople that you came to embrace the value of CMF, or how did that come about in your career?
I tend to think about it as much more innately part of a product quality and personality. And we have such a focus on simplicity and reduction. What that enables when you think about reduction in terms of formal expression and simplicity of pure geometry is actually you create a canvas that enables material to be more expressive. So when you turn one lever to be a little quieter, you can turn one to be much louder. And the one that we tend to turn a little bit louder is the materiality of the product and the finish. But we wouldn't necessarily do that if we were producing something much more overt from a formal expression. It wouldn't take a really high personality grade of material because it would just be too much. You wouldn't be able to consume it. You wouldn't know where to put it. You wouldn't be able to not look at it. How could it be part of a symphony of things in your life without it just being the lead instrument? And you don't always want that of your products around you. They form a lovely ambient backdrop.
I love your analogies about, it being a canvas and a symphony of elements that all have to work together. I think that's a really holistic way of looking at things. And it brings me to my next question about, your fascination with artisanal craft processes like glass blowing and working with ceramic, really understanding how these processes work. And what do you think it is that make tech products more tactile and appealing to people?
I think about the idea of what is an heirloom. What is the thing that you cherish, passed down through a family? And it is crafted objects. And so they just have inherent value. They have inherent value in both the way they're created, but mostly how they're cherished and how they're valued. So that's why borrowing from those spaces generally is successful, because they naturally have a high value connotation.
You're listening to Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast. I'm your host, Bethan Ryder, and we're talking to Benjamin Hubert, founder of Layer Design, about material-led design, and in particular, consumer tech design. Next, he explains how he uses a combination of both analog and digital methods in his design process.
We do use computers quite a lot. We do use analytical tools. We are using AI and things like that, but we also have workshops where we're 3D printing a lot of things, where we're hand making things, we're assembling prototypes, we're building things from card, all the things that you do to quickly sense check. We use both of these things in order to test, fail quickly, validate, move on, improve. And I wouldn't have it any other way. You need that tension between the immediacy of messy making and the care and analysis of technology.
So we're really pushing our clients to think about circular design practices. And I wondered whether now as a studio, this question determines the projects you undertake. And what is the biggest challenge when you're dealing with clients about kind of persuading them to adopt circular design practices or designing for disassembly and all these kinds of things?
Yeah, another great question and obviously extraordinarily important. And whenever anybody works with Layer, we do have an agenda. We're not a white label consultancy. We don't just do the thing and follow the brief inherently without challenging, offering new suggestions and maybe steering the conversation in surprising places. Sustainability is core to our beliefs, but also it is something where you can't just talk through the lens of sustainability in a consumer's perspective. There has to be value and benefit which almost supersedes that in order for it to be adopted. Like, it has to be more functional than, it has to be more beautiful than, it has to be easier to use than anything they've had before, and it should be sustainable. And that's important for mass appeal. It doesn't mean instead of sustainability. It just means the hierarchy. If you go to the market and say, this is the most sustainable, oh, and it's kind of okay functionally, and it's kind of all quite nice looking, it's the tail that wags the dog. And nobody in scale is going to buy into that. And therefore, you need to have long-lasting, inherent appeal, which doesn't rely on something which is a benefit to the world, not necessarily a benefit to the individual at that moment. So we carefully blend it in and ensure it's always part of the equation, but also make sure for the brand, the product is cost-effective. It is going to be easy to produce. It's going to, you know, work really well, and you know, make sure all of those things are there. And think, oh, by the way, it's also really sustainable, because then you're not even having the conversation. You're not saying you need to choose. It's just coming along anyway.
Are you finding in the majority of cases you are the people having to suggest that, though, rather than a client comes? Is it growing that the client is saying, we want, I don't know, a cradle to cradle speaker? You know, are the brands now more likely to request it as part of their brief?
It's definitely becoming more of a precedent that there's an agenda to be reduction in carbon footprint. However that's approached, you know, we're relatively selective at the studio, and what we're finding is there's a really, you know, as the younger generations are coming through and starting companies, you know, the entrepreneur, the startup is being driven from a you know, millennial, Gen Z perspective, that agenda is becoming more and more important. It's not only the youngest generation, but the prevalence of it is increasing with the growth of early stage startups that perhaps have grown up in an environment where they've been more exposed to what climate change is and what the world's going to look like in 50 years. And also, they're young enough to maybe start experiencing that in a more detrimental fashion. And so they have skin in the game. And so actually the things that you generate are for their benefit and for the world. And, you know, that's a cycle which isn't going to get us to a great place, because, you know, it'd be too late by that point. But it is reassuring to see how many people do carry that agenda. And designers have a massive responsibility, particularly when you create physical things.
I was wondering, from your perspective, how do you see the cost of living crisis affecting sustainability strategies and practices?
I think it remains to be seen for sure. You know, obviously the concerning part of that is we're at the beginning of a heightened challenge in terms of the cost of living, and where that lands is a scary prospect, I think, for everybody. And how it changes the prioritization of things around us. You know, the hope is that people buy less but better, where, you know, fast fashion, quick consumerism becomes unsustainable both from a cost perspective and from a planetary perspective.
Yeah, we're quite interested in the fact that if you look at it in a positive way, cost of living and some of the solutions to that cross over quite very nicely with sustainability, and there are many things that actually encourage self-sufficiency that could be good for both.
And I think, you know, from what I've been seeing in the research that I've been doing, this whole hyper-local movement that's happening on a large scale with manufacturers is really addressing the challenges that we're seeing. And, you know, it hasn't been a new concept, but it's definitely been accelerated by the pandemic, which caused the supply chain issues. And now we have the Ukraine crisis, and who knows what's going to be next. And I think that for me, it's really exciting to see manufacturers realize that we do need to change things, and we do need to be able to pivot quickly to address these issues. Supply chains are becoming more local, and companies are being forced to look at local crafts and local materials, and global suppliers are actually setting up shop in manufacturing hubs around the world. So they have these small satellite supply stations. And every time I look at it, I'm always amazed at, wow, this is really happening.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about decentralized production and maybe building in a local vernacular because of it. And obviously, with globalization, we've lost some of that vernacular. We've lost some of the cultural resonance. And maybe some of those things will change. I wish it was quite as simple as that from some points of view. Some products, analog things, fine. But when there's a complexity of systems that are working, that becomes much more complex. But I totally agree with the sentiment in terms of try to be as local in every sense of the word.
I'm really curious about what you see within CMF trends and what are the most intriguing to you and why.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I get out and about, but my eyes are also, the 30 sets of eyes around me in the studio, and I have the privilege of also seeing how they see the world and how they synthesize it and filter it and put it down on paper or Myra or whatever. I'm not a great believer in trends. That's sort of the answer. That's not true. I'm a great believer in socio macro trends and how the big shifts happen and what they cause and create and the opportunities and challenges that manifest because of them. But in terms of fashion trends and I just find they're just too transient. The projects we work on are 2 to 3 years. So by the time you've seen something couture, then hit diffusion, then hit furniture, and then hit consumer electronics, it's too late. And the material trends and application things are so disparate that I couldn't give you a comprehensive red thread other than responsibility, reduction because of it, and perhaps honesty. Honesty of material. And maybe I've just talked myself into those trends.
So you mentioned a few things that you're working on. Is there anything else you can tell us about that's like hot off the press that you've got coming up?
Yeah, see, the thing is, the really exciting things we're working on won't be out for a little while. But one of the things I am really excited about is, and it launches at the end of this year, December, which is obviously a slightly strange time to launch things, but is in the crypto space. So we talked about decentralized production. This is obviously decentralized wealth, and is a really beautiful suite of things that helps you manage your digital currencies and digital sovereignty in a way that hasn't been done before for a very forward-thinking, scaled-up startup. And all like designed and engineered in our studio, and really complex and really compelling, and that's what I'm really excited about. But you'll have to you'll have to wait for, I don't know, what is it, 7 or 8 weeks.
That's exciting. Do you have some crypto, Benjamin?
I might do. I try and get involved in anything we're working on. I try and put myself in the shoes of the people that are using the products, even if I might not be the core user.
Thanks to our guests this week, Benjamin Huber of Layer Design and Reiko Morrison, our head of CMF. And thank you for listening. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find reports covering CMF and tech design on our consumer tech platform. If you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to WGSN.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries. And this ranges from food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. You can subscribe to the show on all major podcast platforms, and if you like what you've heard, why not leave us a rating and review on iTunes? I'd also like to thank our podcast producer, Roland Bodenham. We'll be back in 2 weeks for our next episode, when I'll be joined by several of our experts as we discuss changing consumer behaviours in light of the cost of living crisis and what some of the best strategies are to help brands and businesses survive this tough financial climate. See you then.